Well, hello, internet friends near and far. Welcome to another episode of Podcast 99. This is the ongoing journey through the Mike Schur universe of television programming. And my name is Jason, and I'm joined all the way across town by my friend Jeremy. Say hello, Jeremy.
Hey, how's it going, Jason?
It is going so well. And I'm excited to be able to get into walking through this program in earnest. We've had several life delays, just because of busyness and craziness. So, but now like life's going to be easy from here on out, right?
100%. Yeah.
100%.
Everything's better.
Oh, good. Everything's better. I mean, you have one fewer like residences to maintain.
That's true.
Which is nice. So congratulate Jeremy on wherever you find him. They sold a house that they had to sell. I don't know.
It's true. That's why we took such a long break.
Yeah.
I know we got all of those emails saying, where are you?
So many emails, just inundated. I'm not going to read any of them to spare the listener. I don't want you to feel bad.
Yeah.
Listener. But we're back. We're back. And if you're watching on YouTube or you are watching through Spotify, we have a video component now. Thank you for taking the time to watch this. If you're speeding it up on YouTube, I totally understand. So, Jeremy, what episode are we going to be talking about of Brooklyn Nine-Nine today?
One that I can, well, I don't have the actual name of it in front of me, which I should, but I like the title, your title, better. Okay. So what's the regular title?
The Slump.
The Slump, that's right. That makes
it's
sense.
Actually like two lines down in the document. Oh, yeah, there it is.
It's been a while. Okay. I'm trying to catch up. Yeah. This is season one, episode three, The Slump.
Yes.
Which you've named, I Will Make Better Mouth.
Yes.
Which
I thought
is
that was the
probably
best.
That was the line I identify with the most.
Yeah. I figured you would. I was looking at my notes and it's been a while since we recorded and then I actually posted the videos and I forgot all of the titles.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking at my little journal of like where I would write things down. And one of the notes was Alger nonsense and I didn't use it. And then the other one is adult Highlander. And I'm like, I should have used these. Why did I forget? So anyway, that's why you write things down and keep them.
I have it. We drive a Highlander now. It's kind of weird. Like growing up, I used to watch the Highlander and now I drive one. And there is not only one, they're everywhere.
They're everywhere. And there are not as many sword fights as you would hope for.
Not anymore. Anyway.
Or electrical storms when people experience decapitation.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that show was so dumb and yet it's so good.
Right. Yeah.
It was like just
like most fantasy things.
Yeah. 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 I'm rewatching many shows. This Brooklyn Nine-Nine is one of them. We'll get back to it. But I'm also rewatching Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a good show. And I have forgotten just how much of a creep Quark is. The Ferengi bar owner guy. He's a creep. So,
well, anyway. Just look at his teeth.
Yeah, his teeth, his face, everything about
him. And things he says, yeah.
Yeah, so I shouldn't have been surprised. And also, speaking of creeps, this show has Hitchcock and Scully, and we'll be creeped out by them as well. So, so let's jump in. At the cold open, Jeremy, they are debating best cop movies. And, you know, they hit the classics. They've got Die Hard, Training Day, Lethal Weapon, Fargo, Turner and Hooch. Mm-hmm. Jeremy, which Bad Boys is listed. What is your favorite cop movie?
Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. That was purely a reaction choice.
Would you legit call that a cop movie?
Well, sure. Like, what else is he doing?
Is the cop part of it really the point of the movie?
Well, is the cop part of Donnie Brasco?
No, but I don't think anybody would call Donnie Brasco a cop movie. They'd call it a mob movie.
With a detective trying to take down, like...
Yeah, but the point is the mob.
Well, I mean, you could say that about Die Hard, that the point is the terrorists.
Yeah, I wouldn't call Die Hard a cop movie either. I disagree with Jake here. It is not a cop movie.
Is it a Christmas movie? No, I'm joking.
I would consider it a Christmas movie because it takes place at Christmas time, but I would call it a terrorist movie. Those are the real heroes.
It's just some people trying to take over a building.
Yeah.
No, I wrote down a couple. It's like Jaws. Like, do you think Jaws is a cop movie? I mean, the sheriff takes out the shark.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he saves the town.
Yeah, it is. Jaws is a cop movie. Now so everybody's new favorite cop movie, Jaws.
Yeah, why not?
Perfect. Perfect. But do you Hot have Fuzz. A real Hot Fuzz Hot, is a great cop movie.
Hot yes. Fuzz is probably one of my most favorite non-serious cop movies. Like, yeah, I think it's great. And it plays off of a lot of the tropes of many of the old ones without, you know, really being heavy handed with the cliches. They have fun with it. And so I really enjoy Hot Fuzz. I wrote down some other ones. You know, Chinatown again, mm-hmm. like, you know, detective. I like,
I consider that more of a Water District movie.
No Country.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's a stretch.
Well, there are like three cops in it. Yeah. So I get it.
Seven.
Yeah. Seven is a crime movie. Sure. With cops.
A Touch of Evil.
I haven't seen A Touch of Evil.
That's an old, that's a Orson Welles. That's a mm-hmm. old school. Anyway. What was the last one? I got Heat, LA Confidential. And Silence of the Lambs.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Good list.
Yeah. I was trying to come strong with, you know, it's been a while. So
yeah.
What about you? Where are you at?
Well, my favorite cop movie of all time is The Other Guys. Will nice. Ferrell, Mark Wahlberg. I mm-hmm. think that movie is fantastic. The Rock, Samuel L. Jackson, the guy from Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Bobby Pasquale or something.
The guy from Birdman.
Yeah. Oh man, he's so good in that movie too. Birdman. he's great in The Other Guys too. And from Batman. He's just in a lot of things about men and guys, I guess.
Yeah.
Mr. Mom. Multiplicity. A lot of guys in Multiplicity. I had another one. It just escaped my brain. I didn't write anything down. The movie I was thinking about is so good. It's gone.
Okay.
Oh, 48 Hours.
Oh.
That's a fun movie.
That is a fun movie.
Introduce
the world to bananas and a tailpipe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, 48 Hours, and the theme song is so good.
Mm-hmm.
Mannequin. No. So, anyway. I think Terry lists Francois Truffaut's Breathless, which is a good movie. Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty good movie. I'm not crazy about Truffaut, personally. I'm not really crazy about a lot of French films that I've seen.
The new wave era was a little, it was good. It changed movies. But also I've watched, you know, they're not, I don't know. They're great for what they are, but they're not like, hey, let's go watch Breathless again. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I've never thought that ever. There was a movie that I just watched, and there's no cops involved. So it's a Divergent. Knife in the Water. Have you seen
Divergent?
That?
I haven't.
It is a good movie. It is Polish, though, so it's not French. That's maybe why I like it so much.
Terry likes foreign films.
Terry likes foreign films and yogurt. That's what we're learning about Terry. Mm-hmm. But then Jake shows the actual best cop film, which is Hitchcock being assaulted by an old hooker. She steals his wallet. It's just a really great moment captured from his dash cam. It's awesome. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I would pay to go see that. So
yeah. I like Rosa's, hers is RoboCop. It's got everything she likes. Gratuitous violence.
Yeah. The RoboCop is, I think people misunderstand the point of RoboCop, right? It's like people who say it's their favorite movie. It's like, oh, so you also think like there's a over-militarization of the police state? And they're like, no, it's just really cool and violent. It's like, well, that's not really the point of RoboCop.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. Credits! And then we cut back to so then we cut back to the briefing, and which is such a great framing for this show. Just
like
in general,
launching, like launching all of the plots forward.
Yeah, it's like it's a great opportunity to say, hey, here's what we're going to be doing today. So which I love. Like there are times where I wish I had more people in my life telling me this is what you're doing today, mm-hmm. and being able to just be like, thank you, I'm going to work on that. So, and I know it sounds like, you know, my life is hard. It's not. So going over everything, Jake starts out by saying, hey, Charles, what's up, lady killer? Who you slaying tonight? And come to find out, Charles is wearing the exact same sweater as the lady killer on a wanted poster. And he's like, this is Jeffrey Dahmer's corduroys all over again. So Charles just
Dahmer's
always
corduroys.
Just always gets him. How would anybody know that he's wearing Jeffrey Dahmer's corduroys? Like, what the? So they're checking in, and we find Scully. He's officially 1% done on this digitizing old files project. Which sounds like nothing, but then he lists out how much of it is, so much of it. And that's important for later. That's a, you know, foreshadowing, because mm-hmm. Jake is going to have to do so much of this, so much of it. And then we also find out that he has an anal canyon from sitting on his butt all day. So,
you know, one thing that I noticed with this episode, where there were a few kind of tropes that I feel like this is one of them, because Kevin's from The Office. Somebody has them,
right?
Right from that. And
Kevin has is anal fissures.
No, I know. I mean, you can't use the same exact joke, but it's
yeah.
You know,
well, my question is
definitely in the same area.
What's the difference between an anal canyon and an anal fissure?
I think it's whatever you find out when you Google that, because okay. I don't want that on my computer.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not going to Google it either. I think it probably has something to do with is the separation because of plate tectonics, mm-hmm. or is it like the long term erosion of water? One's a canyon and one's a fissure.
Yeah.
So
as long as you don't get the delta, you're okay.
Yeah. Oof. So have you been to the Grand Canyon? Speaking of amazing canyons.
Speaking of white gaps. It's been a long time, but yeah, I have been to the Grand Canyon.
Hasn't changed much.
It's yeah. So. You like big holes in the dirt.
It's pretty awesome though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
It's majestic, but at the same time, it's like, it's all this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. More of it?
Teeny tiny river down there.
Yeah. I'd like to go down into the canyon sometime, the Grand Canyon, to like do that hike and like have that experience.
Because you want to ride the donkeys.
I do. I was just watching a Donald Duck short where he goes to the Grand Canyon.
Uh-huh.
And he's riding the burro. And I was like, oh, that sounds fun. Yeah. But anyway, he had a whole lion thing and broke some stuff. It's
a whole I take a lot of my travel prompts from Donald Duck. I think that's the way to go.
Yeah. So anyway, we also learn about Scully's foot wart. Mm-hmm. It's all wart. Just so
like
gross.
he dipped his foot and he stepped in Cheeto dust.
Yeah. It's like, this is wrong. So wrong. Ugh. So gross. And it cuts back and Jake's just like, how are you married? And then we find out that Jake's been in a slump on all of these different cases that he's made no progress on. And everybody is razzing him for being in a slump. And he's like, no, I'm not. I'm in a PMOLs, which is the opposite of slump.
Mm-hmm.
So then everybody walks out. They cut to Jake's desk and Holt's saying, like, I'm concerned that your open cases pile of garbage is bigger than your closed cases mound of garbage.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. And so I love Jake. Are you familiar with race cars? Let me give you a little analogy. Formula One or stock. And he's like, I'm out. So, and then he says, you know, let's say you hit a speed bump. And he's like, I was like, there's speed bumps on race car, on racetracks.
I don't know. There should be.
Yeah. So, Holt is trying to help him get back on track. But it is not going well. But Holt's, Jake's like, I got this case. It's about to close with a missing grandma. It's going to be fine. And so that's the hope. So you want to just, we were going to go down different roads and I just started with Jake. Should I just keep going with Jake?
Yeah, we can't really change now.
I know we're locked into this thing. So Jake brings in a family and the missing grandmother, and they're like, we don't know who this lady is. We've never seen her before in her life. And then Jake's like, no, this is Helen. And she says, who's Helen? which, you know, I think if you are trying to find a missing person and you find a person who seems missing, mm-hmm. a good place to start is, what's your name?
Yeah. I mean, it's a polite thing to do with any person that you meet.
Yeah. But I wonder if Jake just went up to this elderly lady on the street
lost.
And
right.
was like, do you know these people? It's all going backwards. Maybe this is why he's not such a great detective. Maybe this is the slump. He's just going up to criminals. Is like, did you crime? And like, no.
Nope. Uh-uh. All right.
Didn't crime. So we find out that these people are not related to who we come to find out is Ethel Musterberg from the Prospect Heights Senior Center. Jeremy, how do we know so much about Ethel Musterberg so quickly?
Oh, because Charles is doing his best detective work by frisking her and finds an identification card in her back pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is just a single card. Not that obvious. So Charles did a thorough job here. So anyway, so he frisked her butt and so Jake remains in an unsolved case slump here. So then it cuts to Jake asking everybody into the break room and he's like, I need your help. If somebody I know may have been in a slump, what would you do? And they have solutions. Charles, his solution is, you know, after he got divorced, he hasn't been in a slump. So he's like, get divorced.
Right.
But first you'd have to get married. And then Rosa is fly to Montreal, hit a classy bar and have sex with a stranger, slump over. Terry suggests 10,000 sit-ups. Mm-hmm. And Jake's like, what if you can only do 9,500 or three? So Holt is like, what's going on in here? And there's like we're trying to get Jake's friend out of his slump. And Holt's thing is like, I've always found just working the cases is the best way to get out of a slump. So Jake is like, all right, fine, I'll do that. But right after Montreal, that sounds fun. So cut to Jake talking to Hitchcock, who we are learning more and more is not a very good detective. Him and Scully, they do not want to actually do detective work. And he's trying to swap a case with him. And Hitchcock's like, why would I swap a case with you? I've got a sure lock. He's selling meth out of his apartment. It's a guaranteed arrest. And then Jake's whole pitch is like, but that means that you're going to have to do paperwork. And mm-hmm. I have these cases that cannot be solved. So you cannot have paperwork. It's like, oh, yeah. All right. And so they switch. And Jake thinks he's going to have this whole thing solved and get out of the slump. And we get a new nickname for Jake from Charles, the Jake Hammer or the Jake Rabbit. Which would you go with, Jeremy?
Oh, man, neither, because, if I had Jake Hammer.
Jake Hammer's a more copy name.
Yeah. Jack Rabbit, Jake Rabbit. I mean, mm-hmm. not so much.
Yeah. All right. Well, so he's going to go try to get this meth dealer. So we cut to the Sackett Towers and busting into this apartment. And who's in the apartment, Jeremy?
Old man.
He's an old man who is practicing his flute, which, Jake's like, all right, flute man. Who else is in this apartment? And he's like, I live alone with my birds. And Jake thinks they're all bird mules for drugs, which would be a lot of birds and not that much drugs.
You know, actually, but I mean, if you had homing pigeons, that's not a terrible idea.
Yeah, but they can't carry that much.
You just need a lot of them.
I know, I guess.
Like a John Woo amount of pigeons.
That's a lot of, that's probably too much pigeons.
Too much pigeon.
And right. They fly so slow. And you need Nick Cage to fluff his trench coat. And the pigeons come out of the trench coat for some reason, or in a church. So. And he's diving between pews and there's pigeons everywhere. Those movies are great.
Yeah. It's true.
Are we talking about Face Off? Was that John Woo? Which one is this?
I don't remember. Well, I know he did one of, Mission Impossible 2, I wanted, or is it 3?
I think he did 2.
With Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Oh, maybe that's 3. I don't know. 2 was...
All I remember was the motorcycle joust. It was like 2 motorcycles, guns, ablaze. Anyway. Pigeons, homing drug mule pigeons. But this guy has birds, and most of them look like kind of parrots.
He did Mission Impossible 2.
Okay. And a cockatiel, I think.
Yeah. These would not be helpful.
No.
I'm not a drug dealer, but I'm just saying. Like, I don't think...
Oh, you know why they don't use stool pigeons? That's why they don't use them.
Because they would rat you out?
Yeah, exactly. Every time. Well, they are the rats of the sky. Yeah. So now it all makes sense. It's all coming together.
Mm-hmm. So... He didn't solve a case.
No.
And he got pooped on. Yeah, which people say is good luck.
Somewhere.
I do not believe in luck, so I'm not going to go for it. So, so they go back to the precinct, and Charles is trying to convince him it's good luck. And at the same time, Hitchcock comes in with 4 criminals. And he's like, Jake's like, what happened? Hitchcock's like, I was at the crime scene and this guy comes up out of nowhere and confesses. He says, I got to make things right. So he helps me track down his accomplices.
It's like when you're on the freeway and your lane is stopped. And so you get over and then the lane that you were in moves forward.
Yeah.
And
now you're
twice as behind. Like, yeah. Come on, man.
Right. And so you get back and then it.
And then the other side goes. Yep.
Same deal with the grocery store.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. My wife is constantly looking at other lines at the grocery store, at Costco in particular. Mm-hmm. And it's like, we just need to stay here.
Yeah.
If we move.
You got to commit.
Yeah. They're all terrible.
It's the fox and the, it's the classic fox and the grapes.
Okay. I don't know that classic.
The whole Aesop's fable was about Costco lines.
Okay. Cops and grapes. Fox and grapes. What?
The fox and the grapes. The fox goes across. He's got some grapes.
Okay.
You find some grapes. He's like, cool. So he's going across this bridge.
Uh-huh.
And there's a pond or a lake below. And he looks down and goes, look at that fox with grapes. I want those grapes. And he tries to go after those grapes, drops his grapes in the water, has no grapes.
So now the water fox has 2 sets of grapes.
That's the moral of the story.
This is capitalism.
Be a water fox. Yeah.
Oh, snap. Mom's a water ghost. So... Okay. One of my favorite SNL things. Aw, snap. Mom's a water ghost. Okay. So we're learning so much today. Be a water fox. You get more grapes. You trick land foxes because they're dumb. And go to crime scenes and you'll find more criminals.
Stay in your lane. You'll get there.
And don't go to Costco. Jocelyn and I went to Costco one time, my daughter. And sorry. And the guy was
Costco guy.
Costco guy. We unload everything onto the conveyor belt, and guy is slowly beeping everything. Like beep, slide. Just so slow.
I don't like this. Yeah.
And we had a not small, you know, amount of stuff. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, Jocelyn and I are like, we're dying because it's like, we know we're going to talk about this later. And this guy has no idea how many years we're going to be laughing about him. So, and we still do. Every time we go to Costco, if we see him, we're like, oh, don't go to that line. So anyway,
hey, where are we at? Oh, we're at another Costco story because do you remember? This is the conversation part. You know, we keep saying that, but did you ever go, are you old enough to have gone to Costco when they had to hand enter in the
yes.
product numbers?
Yes.
19412.
Yeah.
21316.
Right.
Yeah. I have no end to that story, but I'm just saying, if you think it's bad now, it used to be worse.
It was amazing that they could do anything.
Right. Oh yeah. I mean, they were fast.
They were so fast and they knew all these numbers off the top of their head. And the, it's amazing that they even got out of Kirkland.
Yeah, right? Because they found like the 10 people who could actually type with one hand really fast.
Tenki. Yeah. Tenki's awesome.
Tenki. I mean, just 1, 2, 3, you know.
Yeah. But like this premise of this whole thing is like, we're going to make a store that you have to be a member to get into. Mm-hmm. You're going to get more stuff than you need and pay more than you think you should. But you're going to think it's a deal because there's so much of it. And,
like it.
And hold me, wait.
Come on, please say it.
You know all those grocery stores with their fancy lasers?
Yeah.
We're going to just trust human memory.
Yeah.
So who's in? And like all these billionaires are like, yes, give me some more of that. I want to be a part of this Costco phenomenon. And there's like, we're going to have a generic brand of things. What are you going to call it? Like Costco brand? No.
Mm-mm, no.
We're going to call it a small little town at the time, just outside of Seattle, where our first store is going to be called. And people are never going to really understand that Kirkland is the hub of all of Costco dumb, but we're just going to call it Kirkland Signature. Why Signature? Why not Signature? I don't want your money anymore. Get out. I'll find other investors. So
yeah, because once you get through the line, there's a prize, and that's $1.50 hot dog.
Yeah.
Or, so it's worth the wait. Like that, I think that was the original, really, that was the, like, man, if I can just get out of here,
yeah,
hot dogs.
You get the $1.50 hot dog, and then if you have children, they draw a little smiley face on your receipt.
Oh, yeah, when you leave?
Yeah. Also, you know how you got to be a member to get in? You also have to be checked to leave. We're going to make this so many roadblocks to enjoying this product. Mm-hmm. And people will keep coming because of that $1.50 hot dog.
Exactly.
I think I'm going to have one today.
All right. Well, we got to the food part.
Yeah, I know. I stopped doing intermittent fasting. If listener, if you were with us during that whole parks and conversation phase, there was a season where I was not eating breakfast. And that was a bad idea. Breakfast is the best. I'm no longer, doing intermittent fasting. And, as you can tell, but I'm still thinking about food as soon as we start recording. I don't know if there's a problem. So anyway, where are we?
I don't know.
We're in this show. Bird poops on the thing. Hitchcock brings in these people. And then, so Jake, is still in the slump. Gina tells him as he's going to the bathroom, that the DA, is going to have to dismiss some of his cases because they mishandled evidence at mm-hmm. the medical examiner's office. And so that's great. And he tries to flush the toilet and it explodes on him and he's covered in urinal water.
Urinal water.
Yeah. And there's no more paper towels. So
sounds about right.
Goes into Holt's office and he's like, why are you wet? And he's like, don't worry. It's clean urinal water. And Charles, you could eat off his shirt. And I love Holt. Why would I ever do that? Jake's finally coming to realization that he is in fact cursed. And Holt's like, you know, I know a guy who was cursed. A friend of mine back in the 1A, Detective Smith, we called him Smitty. He thought he was cursed. And because cops are superstitious, the whole precinct thought he was cursed. And then Jake's like, but then he found a case, he solved it, and he's married to Kate Upton. No one would go out on calls with him. He responded to a riot at a gym without backup and got beaten up by a girls' volleyball team. It was actually quite violent. Charles, man, girls are so scary. So Holt is like, I'm not You can't go out on the field again. I'm benching you. You can digitize old files with Scully. And Jake's like, no, let me just give all my open cases to Hitchcock, who's on a roll, and I'll start over. Give me new things. He's like, no, I don't think that's what's best for you or the squad. So then how long do you think that'll be? Could be a week, a month. And then Charles, could be a year, could be a decade. Sorry, we were just saying bigger numbers. So then Jake is at his desk and he's digitizing files, and it is so boring that he's like, Hitchcock, give me some of those files. Let me jump in on a murder with you. And Hitchcock's like, no, get out of here. You're contagious. And so Holt tells him to leave him alone, and then he comes and he gives him a rabbit foot. And so he's like, I got in touch with Smitty. He says you should rub the rabbit's foot with your left forefinger and your pinky, which is like so hard to do. And that'll do it. And so, so he tries it and he gets a hand cramp, and Holt's just like, rub, rub, rub.
That's how you know the hand cramp is how you know it's working.
Yeah, that's how you know you're getting really lucky. Have you ever done data entry for a job?
No.
It is terrible. That's all I have to say. It's awful. It's so hard. But that's how you get good at 10-key.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm still pretty good at 10-key because I know how the thing works. But my computers don't have it anymore.
I was going to say, how often do you use 10-key now?
Not very.
Yeah.
Most of my work is no longer numbers-based, so...
Unless you're in the book of
numbers, but they already wrote them down for me, so I don't have to.
Perfect.
Thanks, Moses. So Jake is entering things in, and then he has an epiphany. And he gets up, and Holt is eyeing him. He's like, I'm just heading to the can. I was like, take the rabbit's foot. So it does. And so Charles meets him in the bathroom and he's like, I'm not allowed to leave my desk. And so I need you to find this for me. And Charles like, you know, it's kind of like, and Jake's like, no, for the last time, we don't need a clubhouse. And so then it cuts to these scenes of Charles going like, you know what I'm thinking? And over again, like, this could be a clubhouse. So
yeah. One of them was in the morgue.
Yeah.
and this is another one of those, like in The Office when the women's restroom was really nice.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. And
so I think Scher's got a thing about making bathrooms nice.
Later in this very series, there will be a Shangri-La, a secret clubhouse type thing. Yeah, so Charles goes and he gets the things together. And he's going, I'm just saying, put a couple of other chairs in here, which is gross. I never understood that. The women's room at my church growing up had couches in it. And they were not leather couches. They were fabric couches, which means that because like a leather couch is a little bit more impervious to fart dust, right? Whereas a fabric couch is
absorbing
all that fart dust.
Yeah.
So gross. Anyway. Girls are so gross. So then cut back to Charles. He's bringing in that couple and he's like, they're here. And then Jake shoves open the stall door and he's like, is that too dramatic? And Charles is like, no. And so Jake tells them what's up. He's like, I figured it out first. You know what happened to your grandma? Nothing. And they have been doing insurance fraud with saying they're missing a grandma and going from state to state and trying to cash in on some kind of insurance. However, this is where this whole plot falls apart. How do you insure somebody who doesn't exist?
Oh, that's a good point.
I
lost a grandma. You owe me money now.
Yeah. Listen, Allstate. I'll state right now how much money you owe me for my fake grandma. $1 million. But that was enough to solve the case. And you're like, you know why we did this in the bathroom? Because you're full of crap.
Ammo.
Jake Hammer strikes again. So then Jake is pretty stoked and he goes to Holt's office, like curses over, slump is done, goes again to take a selfie with him while Holt is saying permission denied and it's too late. And so Holt's like, oh, so the rabbit foot worked. It's like, maybe, but my mind was so numb from doing that repetitive data entry stuff that I just had a realization. And Holt's like, ah, all talented detectives have their ups and downs, Peralta. So he's like, oh, so you think I'm talented? No take backs. And then Holt's like, you know why Charles is never in a slump? Because he just keeps grinding. You got to keep your head down and keep doing the thing. And so Jake's like, okay, but if that was your whole plan, then why the rabbit's foot? He's like, well, because I was messing with you. And so, yeah, well, Jake is pretty stoked because they're becoming homies.
Becoming homies.
Yeah. Me and Holt are homies. So that's Jake's story. Huzzah. We did it, Jake. I'm proud of you. Anything we missed from that story that you wanted to like call out?
No.
No. All right. Okay. So the next one then, you want to, let's talk about Amy and Rosa.
Okay.
How about that?
How about it?
All right. So Holt asks Amy to organize a community outreach program to talk to troubled teens to help them become what Rosa will later call snitches. So, yeah. So that's where this one's going. She goes into the office and he congratulates her on the J Street drug bust. And he was like, that's what we do this for. And I was like, for praise? he says, can you lead this thing up? And he's like, absolutely. I won't just head it up. I will head and shoulders it up. I will dive in, swim around it, and just be altogether good with it. And this is the Schmidt moment here. Be more articulate when you speak to the children. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
I will make better mouth. So, Amy asks Rosa to help, starting by, asking or complimenting her shoes. And Rosa just right away, what do you need? And so she's like, I need somebody to help with the junior police program seminar. And Rosa is like, oh, you want to get a bunch of loser kids to become student snitches? It's like, no, it's at-risk kids, losers, to sign up to become junior police officers, snitches. She's like, Amy is like, Captain specifically asked me to run it. And here's the info. And Rosa's like, now I got to read something.
This keeps getting worse.
Yeah. The last couple episodes, I don't know if we really nailed in the Rosa character, but this one is, I think they figured it out.
Yeah.
Like Rosa is tough. Her favorite things are gratuitous violence and she doesn't like to read apparently. But we'll find out later. She does like to read and she's a big fan of Nora Ephron.
But she's the part that I was confused with was she's calling them snitches, but she is a cop.
Right.
Herself.
Yeah. I think there is a lack of trust between the police and informants because informants are in it for themselves.
True. They're just trying to stay out of trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's not like they're the people they want to hang out with.
Gotcha.
So then cuts back to the starting the junior police program and they're trying to get things going. And Gina comes in and I missed something. Oh, Gina in the previous scene offers to help. But they're like, we don't need your help. You're not a cop. Gina does not like that. So they start the program and Gina comes in.
Very poorly, though. I mean, she starts off with a really cringy, junior police program, aka Mission Impossible, and then plays a theme song. So trying to do the whole hello, fellow kids thing and failing miserably.
Yeah, that's one of the best moments in 30 Rock. Hey, fellow kids. And his shirt says music band. Oh, Steve Buscemi, a national treasure. Gina yells out from the back, narc, and all the kids are on Gina's side. And so Amy's frustrated and confronts Gina. And she's like, since I have nothing to offer and since I'm not a cop, I thought I'd just show up and learn. Rosa is not helping. So Amy is like, I know you think getting in trouble is cool, but let me show you what can happen if you continue down this path. Hey, yo, I'm an at-risk kid, and I think it's cool to sell drugs. And then Pete Davidson is like, hold up. Why does he sound like the guy who's selling drugs sound like he's black? He's not. well, why not? Are you, and Gina, why not? Are you saying that black people can't sell drugs? No, I'm not saying that. Pete Davidson, again, we have a black president. Why can't black people sell drugs? And then they start chanting, black people can't sell drugs. Black people can't sell drugs. Again, a Michael Schur treasure here is chanting. People chanting.
Yeah. We need more chants and things.
Yeah. And Holt shows up at that moment, looking into the door at the back of the room. And Amy's just like, thumbs up. So
totally working.
Black people can sell drugs. And then cut back to Amy and Rosa looking into the police program through the window. And like, I didn't think it would be so hard to get these kids to sign up. And Rosa's like, look, they don't trust you. You're like smart and articulate. And Amy's like, so are you. And why am I offended? And so Rose like, they don't identify because you're not from the streets and I am. And so she goes back in, rips out earbuds out of somebody's ears. She's like, I know deep down you think you're tough, but you're all scared. How do I know? Because I've been that same kid and you don't get your crap together. I'm going to end up busting you and throwing you in jail. Got it. And then Pete Davidson has a little remix app on his phone. He's like, remix. And, it plays Rose's speech and they're laughing at her and she doesn't know how to handle it.
Why did they put Scary Terry in there?
Probably because he's busy building a castle. Oh, we'll get to that. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not a spoiler. If they've already watched this episode, they know what happens. But
that's true.
So then again, Amy and Rosa are sitting at the table in the break room. And like, I don't know how to get to connect with these kids. They're mean and shallow and respect nothing. And like, I don't know who they would even listen to. And then we hear Gina yelling at Hitchcock for using Tupperware lids. And she's like, it's difficult. It hurts my fingers when I'm trying to open it. And Hitchcock apologizes to her for making it harder for her to steal his lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And so then they're like, oh, Gina is the one we need to get involved in here. And so they bring Gina in. Now, Jeremy.
Yeah.
How does Gina attempt to motivate these children?
Through the power of dance.
Yes. Yes.
Because the world can't hold her down.
No. She's beautiful, no matter what they say. World can't hold her down. Christina Aguilera. Yeah. And if, listener, you really should jump over to the YouTube channel because Jeremy was just dancing.
I'm trying to interpret it.
My favorite is when she skips forward to the kids in the dance. And then I hit the microphone.
Now, this is an interactive podcast.
Yeah. When she's like skipping forward and then turns around and like, it's like, what on earth is happening here? Yeah. And kid number two says, I think I speak for everyone when I say your weird dancing was just weird.
It's no deeper than that. It's just weird, dude.
Yeah. But then Gina's like, here's the deal. Cops make $52,000 a year. You never have to stop at a red light and you get to carry a gun. Who wants in? And eight people sign up. Pete Davidson is not one of them. So he's just sitting there shaking his head the whole time.
He's like, you know, one of these days I'm going to get that Taco Bell money.
Yeah. Yeah. One of these days. And so Amy asks, like, how did you do that? How'd you know that would work? And she said, that's what made me sign up when I was a kid. I'm like, oh, you did this? Uh-huh. It does not work. So then Holt is congratulating Amy on getting eight recruits. And she's like, thank you. But I need to say, Gina is the one that got through to the kids. And she's like, yes, I am amazing. I only asked for one thing in repayment, a 600% raise. And then Holt says, or I give you a 0% raise and make you my personal assistant. And I think you have hidden talents, which will make a surprising good at the job. And she's like, no, I have no talents. And he's like, you start Monday. So that is happening, and Gina's like, constantly getting Holt's approval is the worst. And Amy, who thrives on people's approval, is like, I can only imagine. But she will never have it. Never. In this episode. Later, though. All right. So that's a fun one. We get to see a little bit more of Gina and her craziness and her weirdness. Because I think that's the first time we really see Gina and her dance motivation.
Yeah, so far, I think.
Yeah. And later we're gonna be introduced to our dance group Floorgasm. Such a terrible name. But at the same time,
the puns.
Had a smaller high school experience than I did, yeah. Right? In Onalaska, Washington.
Washington.
Did you guys have a dance team?
We did, not intentionally. No.
They were just kids who were doing like dance battles.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of rap dance battles.
So how many times did you win that?
Dance off. No, oh, never.
You lost every time?
I lost. No, I just didn't participate.
Oh,
I was,
sure.
I was a conscientious,
objector. Right. Yeah. Okay.
Battling, right. Dance battling. It sounded too,
it's too violent.
Too violent for me. Yeah.
Dance is supposed to unify.
Right. Not separate, not tear apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's nothing.
We got to take it to the streets. We got to step up too. We got to break in.
How about you? Did you guys have a dance?
We did. We had cheer.
Uh-huh. And did you have flags?
Yeah. Well, we didn't have flags with cheer, but we then had drill team, which was the girl, in my understanding, the girls who weren't quite up to cheer, mm-hmm. But they were still good. They were talented, but they were not what they were looking for at the cheer team. And then we had the Lake Washington Kangaroo dance team. And those were the girls. It was all girls back then. I think those were the girls who did not want to hold up to any of the moral standards of the cheer or drill teams. So it was interesting when they would, because they were a club. They were a recognized club.
They still wanted to be a group.
Yeah. And so they would participate in like assignments.
group assemblies.
They would participate in assemblies and it'd be like, you know, I'm like this Christian kid who, you know, like my fun time is going to youth group. And I'm like, what is happening on the floor over there with those girls at this homecoming assembly? It was weird. It was a weird time. Anyway. So
did they lean into the kangarooness of your namesake?
No, oh, they went.
Because that would be great.
They went the other way. They didn't even lean into the purpleness. Because that's right. Huh. We were the purple kangaroos. They wore all black and sequins. So no purple, no kangaroos. If it was the whole time the dance team was just like jumping and boxing, that'd have been rad. But
yeah.
All right. So we got one more storyline here, Jeremy.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Let's do it. So Charles asks Terry to help him fill out a lineup to be Scary Terry.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, I love being Scary Terry. He says what regular Terry's thinking. And it cuts to a lineup and Terry's in it. It's like, this is taking too long. I'm going to miss the farmer's market. which I love that Terry, that's what regular Terry's really thinking.
Right. Terry also loves farmers markets.
Yeah. And so he's like, no, I'm too busy though. I can't help you. And so Hitchcock or Boyle, can you help fill up a lineup? And Hitchcock's like, oh great. And he starts taking his shirt off, which I'm like, no one asked you to take your shirt off. Can't hear you. Shirt's over my ears. Yeah, so then later, Charles walks by the a door and he hears Terry grunting in there. He's like, don't make me hit you again. And he thinks it's like he's abusing a person.
Yeah.
And he's like, he busts in. And Terry's like, I'm building this dollhouse for my girls. It's their birthday. I told my wife I would get it done. And Charles, sweet, sweet Charles, says, I had the exact same one when I was a kid.
Now, I'm not saying I had a dollhouse or anything, but do you remember the Fisher Price castle? Did you ever have with the little, like the round head guys, and they popped in and there's a trapdoor, yellow trapdoor.
Nope.
And then the gate came down.
No, I didn't have that.
Well, that's the end of that story.
So did you enjoy that?
Oh yeah. I loved
your favorite toys.
Oh, it was great. Yeah. There was like a little flag on top. It was like on a spring, so it didn't break. Yeah, it was awesome. There's like a little alligator down in the moat, but I mean, it's part of the sticker. I'm just saying, hours.
The alligator was a sticker.
Well, like in the moat. The moat was just
It was a sticker.
And with an alligator on it. It had details. Is all I'm saying. There's a dungeon. It was great. So
yeah,
I get it. I get the appeal, Charles.
Yeah,
that's all I'm trying to say.
My mother bought my daughter for Christmas one year a giant dollhouse.
Yeah.
And we took it apart just recently. And we're like, now what?
when did she get it for?
Oh, when she was like maybe 5. She's 15 now. And we took it apart like maybe a year and a half ago. And then we just had the pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now what do we do? Because no one's playing with this thing. It's just taking up space. And so we put it all the pieces against the wall. And we were cleaning the downstairs family room area. And we're... My wife was like, we should probably just give this away.
Yeah.
And I was like, we can never give this away. And we also have this bench that my mom got for us that it's like a storage bench. And my wife again was like, we should just give this away. I was like, we can never give this away.
Why don't you put the dollhouse in the storage bin?
That's exactly what we did. It was actually, it fit perfectly. It was one of those things where it's like, look how smart my mom is. That's the moral of this story.
she had a long-term plan. Yeah.
So it used to be what we put all our shoes in when it was, by our entryway in our old house. And now we just have this bench and a dollhouse. Synergy.
What are you going to, like, what's the plan though? I need to know. Like, I don't know why, like, because I'm in the middle. Yeah, I'm in the middle of trying to throw away so much stuff, and I'm like, why can't you? I mean, no, yeah. You guys aren't going to use it.
We are not, but someday, our mm-hmm. children may have children.
Oh,
and it's one of those things where it's like, this is actually a really good toy,
right?
And if we build it again, then they can use it when the grandkids come over.
Like the boxes of like all those like cords that come with electronics, yeah, that you're saving exactly. to give to exactly. your kids and their grandkids.
Exactly. I want my kids to be able to print in a dot matrix printer in the year 2077.
Right.
And I'd be like, oh, I wish dad would have kept that 16-pin cable.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking of the future. So like, we have all of Judah's trains. You know, we have these things that is like, these are good toys. They're made mm-hmm. with actual wood. And not like plastic and lead. They're good toys. So yeah. Anyway. So Jeremy plays with dollhouses, and I have a dollhouse. That's where we're at, and my mom is really smart. That's the moral of this story.
So, I like it. We got there.
So Charles offers to help, and Terry's like, no, I can do this. And he's like, okay. So later, the next red letters, Charles is checking in on Terry, and he's groaning and whimpering on the floor. And he's like, are you okay? It's like, this fairy princess castle has defeated me. Mm-hmm. I'm a grown man with man hands and a man brain. I should be able to put together a dollhouse in less than 4 hours. Why does it have to be so hard? Look, and he holds up the screws. This has 3-point sides and nowhere to screw it in. And there's wheels. What kind of castle has wheels?
Owls.
Which is true. But I understand the wheels of it is like you move it around when it's in the house.
Because it's huge. It would be one of the largest pieces of furniture that you own.
This dollhouse is an investment, much like a mm-hmm. timeshare. So he's defeated. And later, Charles comes by and he's like, hey, I assembled the castle for you. Here it is. And Terry's like floored. And he's like, what happened to all the princess flourishes? And Charles is like, well, they were destroyed. That's Terry's rage. So he turned it into a princess police station. You know, some jobs take brains. Some take jobs take muscles. Some jobs take dainty little fingers. Did I ever tell you how to wear a women's wedding ring?
That was probably one of my favorite lines of the entire show because it was such a non sequitur.
Yeah. Did I ever tell you I had to wear a women's wedding ring?
Like it kind of applies, but it doesn't.
Yeah. And then Charles is like, you're a good dad, so don't put so much pressure on yourself. Oh, check this out. And he pushes a button and it's a working siren and it's super loud and people freak out. He's like, I'll fix that. So,
and yeah. Scene.
And episode. That's a fun one. I enjoyed that episode, almost every part of it. The worst part was Scully's foot. Did not enjoy that so much.
Dahmer's corduroys.
Dahmer, it's Dahmer's corduroys all over again. So,
dibs on band name.
Oh, please. Please do that. Make that band. I would go see that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't think I have time for that.
Okay, if you say so.
I'm sure we'd kill.
People would just eat it up.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I mean, you probably would have a lot of remnants in your basement.
Yeah. The good thing is there'd be no leftovers at the end. These are the rare cuts, that the deep cuts, as it were.
The deep cuts, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
yes.
Dahmer. Cannibal. Yeah.
What a well, see you next week. What's episode 4, Jason?
Oh gosh. I had a website that told me those things open a little bit ago, but it was the worst website of all time. So let me look it up real quick on my Google machine.
Yeah, well, if you have already left, bye. But if you're still here, thanks. Well, Jason looks stuff up, I guess. Yeah, I don't know.
This is how Google works. So let me Google it for you real quick.
Tell us, Mark, first log into Facebook. And then
It's called ME Time.
ME Time, Medical Examiner.
Yes, Jake has a little romance with a morgue worker.
Waitress from It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
I've never seen that show.
Mm.
I've never seen a single episode of that show.
They're the worst people.
That's what I hear.
Yeah. So, all right, great. I think this one was 77% on IMDb, or 7.7, something like that. So yeah, it was pretty good. I love the first season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It was one of the strongest first seasons. I think we talked about that. And episode 3 already, I laughed out loud a couple times. And it's just really setting up these characters. I'm excited. The kids are watching ahead. And you know, there's so many great through lines in the series. I'm excited to get back into it in earnest, as you said, and keep going. So
also, listener, if you are, or viewer,
I don't know why I'm looking around.
There's somebody behind you. They are currently running a sale on this on Apple TV stuff. And so if you want to buy the whole series and watch it without ads today in the year of our Lord 2024, on April 12th, it is $25.
Enter promo code.
Whatever your username is, I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. We have that kind of sway with the studios. We're like, we should definitely get those two guys some promo codes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway.
And if you guys need to build a website, you know, it's, thanks to our sponsor Squarespace, who I think built a website for my new purple mattress that I got. So you can follow along with that whole thing.
Have you ever been super frustrated by how expensive razors cost?
Yeah, you know, I have.
Yeah. The guys at Harry's, they were so frustrated with that. They just bought a whole razor company.
That's smart.
Yeah. And so now they sell razors
that are just as expensive as the old ones.
I don't know. I don't really use those.
Yeah, me neither.
So, but we're sponsored by them. We're not sponsored by anybody. Just sponsored by goodwill and the desire to.
We're not selling out, man, unless somebody wants to pay us.
Yeah. I mean, really, what it comes down to is Jeremy and I are busy, and this is an excuse for us to talk to each other.
Basically. Yeah. When we say, I've got the podcast today, you know.
Yeah. I'm working. I'm so sorry. Busy. So same thing I'm doing with my sister on my Hobbit forming podcast. So gives me a reason to talk to Heather.
You know, you don't have to make new podcasts for every person you want to hang out with, man.
Well,
I mean, I guess I don't know.
I'm a project-based person.
Right. I don't know if I should be like insulted or like feel really good about the fact that you're making me do work to hang out with you.
What work do you have to do? You have to watch a TV show and talk about it.
I know, but I got to set stuff up, plug things in. I'm just saying I could, you know, yeah, I appreciate it.
I'm sorry. Sorry for the discomfort. So with that, listener, if you also, hey, I'm looking for another host who wants to hang out.
supply@itsasurething.com.
We don't have that.
We don't have that.
But you can email parksandconversation@gmail.com. You can leave a comment on YouTube or Spotify. You can rate, review, like, subscribe, ring the bell, all the things. I don't know. I don't know what the kids are doing these days, but we're doing some of it. Okay. So we should let people get on with their life. So Jeremy, I'll see you next week.
Next week. Sounds good. All right. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.